You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. Good morning, everyone. We're back on the record on case CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We are continuing with jury selection, including small group and individual voir dire this morning. Court will note that the state is present, represented by the prosecution. The defense is present, represented by the defense attorney, Mr. Pryor, as well as the defendant here present. Are the parties ready to proceed with voir dire this morning, beginning with the state?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is the defense ready?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. We will go ahead and have the bailiffs bring in our jury group. I'll please remind everybody in attendance here today that we are subject to the court's courtroom conduct order, so please make sure any of your devices are silenced or turned off. They'll be taken by the marshals if they cause an interruption. And counsel, I'll just also remind you to please not have, well, never mind. We'll go through the voir dire individuals once the jurors are brought in here, and I'll confirm that we are broadcasting at this point. Is that correct? Okay. So we're on the record broadcasting. I'll advise the jurors of that when they come in. And so we'll have the jury cut.
All right, please. All present, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Please be seated. All right, good morning, everyone. We are on the record on KCR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. The court will note that the attorneys and defendant are present. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Is the defense ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Before we begin with the voir dire, this group of jurors, let me inquire from the state. Is there any objection to the manner in which the jury panel has been recalled and seated today?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Any objection from the defense?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you for returning this morning. You've been recalled as prospective jurors in the case now before us. I'll reintroduce my court staff again and myself. I'm Stephen W. Boyce, the district judge for Fremont County, Idaho, and I'm in charge of the courtroom in this trial. The court clerk assisting me today, Shannon Holstein, is here, and she's keeping minutes of the trial proceedings and will also administer oaths to you as jurors. We have our courtroom marshals here also assisting in maintaining courtroom order and helping the jurors move about where they're supposed to go. Our court reporter is Mary Fox, who is taking a stenographic record of all the proceedings today, and she's seated down here to my left. And then over against the wall to my right, Courtney Stallings is my staff attorney, and she assists me with legal research and administrative issues that come up throughout the day. Each of you has been qualified to serve as a juror of this court. You've each filled out a questionnaire that's been reviewed by the court and the attorneys, and it's been determined to recall you for further questioning today. The first thing we do in a trial is to select jurors, in this case, 12 jurors and 6 alternates for a total of 18 jurors from among the group we've summoned. The clerk will now call the roll of the jury using your red card. So you each have a red card. As your name's called, please raise that and indicate that you're present verbally for our record, please. Madam Clerk.
Juror number 823.
Here.
Juror number 1198.
Here.
Juror 1204.
Here.
1242.
Here.
Juror 1251.
Here.
Juror 1320.
Here.
Juror 1332. Juror 1358?
Sure.
Juror 1365?
Yes.
Juror 1378? Juror 1379?
Yes.
Juror 1389? Juror 1392? Juror 1424?
Yes.
Juror 1535?
Yes.
Juror 1541?
Yes.
Juror 1585?
Yes.
All right, thank you for returning. The court will advise the jurors that we are broadcasting this proceeding on the court's official YouTube channel for public access. Also, the courtroom is open. However, there are no cameras pointed towards or making any photography of you as jurors. However, your voices are subject to that broadcast. I'll next introduce you to the case and the parties at this time. In this case, the case has been brought by the state of Idaho. I'll sometimes refer to the state as the prosecution. Counsel, as I list your names, you may stand briefly. So the state is represented here by Lindsay Blake, Fremont County prosecutor. Bob Wood is the Madison County prosecutor. Ingrid Beatty, a specially appointed prosecutor in the case, and Rocky Wixom, a deputy prosecutor for Fremont County. The defendant in this case, Mr. Chad Guy Daybell, is represented by his attorney, Mr. John Pryor.
Good morning.
This case is a criminal matter, meaning the defendant is charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. I've previously read to you a summary of the charges in the amended indictment when you were here last week to complete your questionnaires. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho has alleged that Chad Guy Daybell committed the following crimes. Count one, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count two, first-degree murder. Count three, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. Count four, first-degree murder. Count five, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Count six, first-degree murder. Count seven, insurance fraud. Count nine, insurance fraud. Mr. Daybell has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember, that's simply a description of charges. It is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial. The defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. The duty of the jury is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in the instructions I will later give you to those facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, you must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is, what the law should be, or what any lawyer says the law may be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including any use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, then, I am going to ask our clerk to administer an oath to the jury panel. The jury panel will be sworn for voir dire examination. If each of you would please stand at this time and raise your right hands, I'll have that oath administered.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon your qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the cause now on trial, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Be seated. I'll note for the record, each one of these jurors did take the oath just given by the clerk. The clerk's now impaneled 17 prospective jurors this morning for questioning in a small group today. Will the state stipulate that these jurors have been properly called and impaneled?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Will the defense stipulate as well?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The court will also note that the jurors, each seven of the 17, has completed a juror affirmation indicating they've not, or that they have followed the court's admonishment to not look into the case between now and the time they filled out their questionnaire last week. And I will just confirm that with the bailiffs. I'm told that all of the questionnaires, affirmations were returned. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. In this part of the jury selection process, then, you're going to be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. Voir dire is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of common law, and in Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold, or by some personal experience or special knowledge you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who will impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand this questioning is not just for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, please hold up your red card. And when you're called upon to speak, you may identify yourself with that red card number. We won't be using your names through any stage of these proceedings. Because this proceeding is being reported by our court reporter, please make verbal responses to any questions, such as yes or no, and try not to just shake your head or say uh-huh or uh-uh, because then we don't get a clear record of what's stated. In addition, try not to talk at the same time as any attorney that may be questioning you or the court, again, so we keep a clear record. If you have any response that you think is too personal or would be embarrassing to discuss in public, or for whatever reason you don't want that to be addressed publicly, you can tell us and we will discuss that in a more private setting outside the presence of others in the courtroom and individually. Also, if you have answers to any questions that you think may prejudice any other prospective jurors or any of the participants in this trial, please refrain from those comments until we can arrange again to have you discuss that outside the presence of other jurors. Also, if you have knowledge of this case from pretrial media coverage or publicity, please don't start talking about any facts of what you may know. We'll discuss that with you individually again so that other jurors don't hear the information that you may already have. I'll now read to you a special instruction that's being given in this case as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Fallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the court's special instruction. At this time, I'll instruct the attorneys to please avoid repeating questions already asked in efficiency, and the attorneys do have the right, however, to direct follow-up questions to a juror's responses. The jury should be aware that during and following the voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side has challenges, what are called for cause, which means that each side can ask that a juror be excused for a specific reason. In addition, each side has a certain number of peremptory challenges, by which I mean each side can challenge a juror and ask that he or she be excused without giving a reason for the dismissal. If you are excused by either side, just do not feel offended or don't feel like your honesty or integrity has been questioned, because it has not. And in addition, I'll note that if you are excused and you are approached by anyone after your excusal that wants to talk about the case with you, once you're dismissed, you are excused from your service and you can do that. However, please bear in mind that we are in the process of trying to obtain impartial jurors. You don't have to talk to anyone who may question you, and if you do so, please respect the opinions of your fellow jurors, and also bear in mind that we're trying to keep down publicity in the case until a jury is selected. At this time, I am going to begin the court's own voir dire, after which the attorneys will be given an opportunity to make their own voir dire inquiries. When I'm questioning jurors, please pay attention to what's being asked because you may be recalled to answer those same questions. The first question I'll ask of the entire panel is as follows. Is the information provided in your juror information forms still true and accurate? And in addition, are your responses in your questionnaire true and accurate as well? If you believe that's all still true and accurate information, please raise your red card. All right, thank you. We've got juror 1332 that did not raise your card. Is there something that you would need to correct or clarify in your questionnaire?
I wasn't feeling very well when I got this paper and they asked me to fill it out. Looking back, really, yeah, there were a few answers.
Okay, that's fine. It was a long questionnaire. I understand. We can talk to you about that probably individually or maybe further in a group, but we'll return to that. Thank you for notifying us of that. The next question.
Judge?
Yes.
I apologize for the interruption, but I saw 1378 did not raise his card, and I thought maybe he has some issues as well.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Pryor. I didn't notice that.
I just wanted to state that my work did say that I would get compensation for being on jury if I have to. I answered that I couldn't do that. I wasn't sure, but they said that I could, so.
Okay, well, thank you for that follow-up information as well. That will lead us into the next question, and I'll ask if this applies to you, you can raise your red card. I want to discuss the time commitment required for jury service in this case. So if you are required to serve as a juror, it's going to be for a period of approximately 8 to 10 weeks. The question is whether or not that time frame or amount of time would create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation so as to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case. If you think you may suffer hardship based on the length of the trial, please raise your red card. Okay, if you could keep those held up for a moment, we'll note down who we've got. All right, we're going to go through individually and talk to each of you about this at this time. And the court in this stage of the proceedings will allow for attorney voir dire also on the issue of hardship. So the first juror we'll speak to is juror 1535. I may have written that number down wrong. Do we not have that?
Got it right. 1535.
Okay, thanks. I was in a different order here. Let's talk to you first then. Juror number 1535, you did raise your red card. Let's discuss the length of the trial. What's your concern about a possible hardship if you had to serve?
The provider for my family. If I take that much time off, I don't know if I have enough money to pay the mortgage or any of that, and I don't have any vacation time at the end of the summer.
Have you had a chance to discuss with your employer the possibility of serving and whether or not there's any way that you receive any compensation if you are serving?
I haven't asked him about compensation, but he knows that I'm here today, obviously.
We don't need to get into too many details, but is this a small company, a big company? How many employees total are in your company?
I would say there's about 20 of us.
Okay, so small business.
Yes.
And you are concerned then, if I'm understanding, that if you're required to serve, you may just be going without a paycheck during that period?
Yep.
Are you a sole provider, or is this your sole source of income?
My wife works part-time.
All right. Follow-up from counsel, please, beginning with the state.
No follow-up, Your Honor. I think given that information, the state would challenge this juror for a hardship.
All right. Mr. Pryor?
Judge, I would agree that this is a hardship.
All right. Juror 1535, if you're in that kind of an employment situation, given the length of this trial, I do believe that would create a hardship for you to be out of work that long. So the court will grant the state's request without objection to strike 1535 on the basis of a hardship. Thank you for returning. The this morning, and thank you for filling out your questionnaire last week. You can submit that questionnaire, please, to the bailiff on your way out, and you are excused from jury service. You're welcome. Apologies for being a little out of order here, but we'll next talk to, I believe, 1541 also. Okay.
The only concern I have is that I'm a team of three, and we are just hiring a new administrator and a temp, and I have a coworker who's going out for surgery. So my hardship would be my team at work for that long period. And she has her bill April 18th, to be out for about 3 weeks. And we'll be training a new administrator and a temp, training a temp on April 8th.
Okay. And again, without going into detail here, your employer is the county, correct?
Ada County Highway District.
Okay. And could you repeat, please, the information that's beyond the employment concerns?
My team is considered of three of us, and our administrator left us. We're hiring one. Hopefully, we'll find out for the administrator at the end of this week. My coworker, the other procurement contracting technician, has had a back surgery on April 19th. She'll be out for 3 weeks. We are hiring a temporary employee to help and assist us, and she starts April 8th. So they'll be really shorthanded if I'm here in 8th. Between those 8 to 10 weeks.
All right, let me ask for any follow-up or dire from state.
Your Honor, given that information, the state does not have any additional questions. We would actually make a challenge to this juror based on hardship, given the information she provided.
All right, Mr. Pryor, response from the defense.
And Judge, I know it's not relevant because she probably won't even be on jury service before that, but my understanding her stepdaughter has a graduation Friday as well.
Oh, yes, that is correct. That? Yes, that is correct. And it's in Twin Falls in the morning
so,
as
Judge,
well.
Given that, I think it's appropriate to excuse her.
All right. Considering the request for an excusal for hardship and a motion to strike made by the state without objection, the court will grant the request and your 1541, your excuse from service. Please leave your questionnaire with the bailiff. Thank you for taking the time to complete your questionnaire. Let's next go to juror 1585. So I know in your questionnaire, you did raise some concerns, but also didn't think it would be a hardship. If you'd like to explain why sitting here today, you believe it's a hardship, you can do that.
So previously, I didn't think it would be a hardship to be here because I thought I could finish my semester online. But my instructors let me know that that wouldn't be possible. I'm a full-time college student, and I would like to finish this semester, so I only have one more to go. And obviously, being here would delay that and let me go to school for another semester. So.
Okay, where are you in terms of progress through the current, you're currently in a semester right now?
Yes.
And when is that scheduled to be done?
Beginning of May.
All right, if you were out for these 10 weeks, then you would essentially lose the semester. All right, any follow-up questions from the state?
No, Your Honor. We also had a note here to follow up on that hardship. I think given that additional information, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
All right, response from the defense.
And Judge, in addition, if I'm not mistaken, she also, and I'm not trying to expose the information, you have a 7-year-old son, from what I understand.
Three-year-old? Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. That more is more of the case. So not only does she have her education that she has to be concerned about, also having to, I was under the impression it was a 7-year-old. My memory must not be as good as I thought. A 3-year-old son, so I would just move for hardship as well, Judge.
All right. I've considered that, noting in the questionnaire, it wasn't initially listed as a hardship, but I guess upon further consideration, the jurors thought about that and the prospect of losing a whole semester of school, in addition to these other issues brought up without objection from either side. The court would agree, juror 1588, that would constitute a hardship. So thank you for coming in and filling out your questionnaire. You can be excused, but thanks to the court. Let's next talk to juror 1198. Okay, you did list some information in your questionnaire about the hardship. If you'd like to explain what information you have in addition.
I've started a job recently in the last few weeks. I guess twofold concerns. So just recently starting a job, I only have access to the person who I am replacing for just a few weeks. So just concerned that a lot lot of the knowledge that I should be learning will lead with the person that I'm placing. So that's the first concern. Speaking with HR at my company, I'm only compensated for 2 weeks of jury service, and I am a sole proprietor.
All right, follow-up from the state.
Your Honor, the state also had a note to follow up on that hardship and specifically what he'd indicated. I believe there was also an indication of a soccer tournament in May, a triathlon in April.
I have since not done a triathlon, but yes, I have 2 children doing soccer.
Is that still a concern for you as well?
Yes. Because I believe there would be some Fridays.
Your Honor, I think given the work hardship as well as the obligations to the family hardship, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
All right. Request or response from the defense.
Judge, I would have also moved for excusal based on hardship as well, sir.
All right. The court's considered that with the explanation from this juror that may only receive paid for a 2 week period, and given the length of the trial and that he's a sole provider of income for the family, the court does find that there's been an expressed hardship requiring your excusal. So, juror 1198, thank you for coming in and completing your questionnaire. You can be excused.
Thank you, Judge.
You're welcome. Juror number 1242, in your questionnaire, you didn't list any type of hardship. Can you explain?
Yes, Your Honor. I think when I had taken the test, I didn't really fully realize the implications of the time involved as well. I've got two concerns. Number one is the hardship of work. I did have a chance to speak with my HR department, and although they grant me the time off to attend and participate in the jury, I would receive no compensation. 8 to 10 weeks of jury duty would cost me in excess of $25,000 in income. I'm 63, single, and that would have a high impact on both my potential retirement as well as my personal savings. My second concern is that last year in June, I was diagnosed with systemic lupus erythematosus, which is an autoimmune disorder. And a part of the circumstances of that disease is that they have certain triggers and things like that that cause flare-ups. Flare-ups during lupus can result in hair loss, full-body rashes, extreme fatigue and nausea, inability to participate pretty much in anything. And so my concern with that is that I believe that the stress and the anxiety that I've experienced in this involvement of this case would potentially impact my disease, and that could that could make me unable to participate at all. I could a bad day for me could last 3 to 5 to 7 days. Since my diagnosis last June, I've had 3 flare-ups. The first one lasted over 2 months. That's the first time I'd lost all my hair and such like that. Second one was in October and November of last year, and the last one I experienced was in February of this year, and that was about a 5 to 7 day stint. It's something that I have no control over, and I manage my diet and my lifestyle to avoid stressful situations. I also have to avoid sunlight and heat and exhaustion. And so between the loss of the income, I am a sole provider in my house. I don't have a family, but at this time I also have an elderly dog who's been diagnosed with an enlarged heart, and she is on her last, probably her last year with the family. She requires medication 2 times a day. And so I basically am the sole care provider for her. I work from home because of what my disease now. Had I needed to report to an office, I would need to go on to disability because I'm just too inconsistent. I approached my doctor on Monday to write a letter to the court explaining my circumstances. And unfortunately, I was not able to get that this morning. They were not open on my way in. But I would be happy to provide that written doctor's notice to you regarding my disease as well as the hardship of my loss of income.
All right, juror 1242, thank you for the explanation. Does the state only follow up for DART?
No, Your Honor. I think given all the information provided, the state would make a motion to have this juror removed for cause based on hardship.
All right, response from the defense?
I also would move for exclusion of cause.
All right, thank you. Juror 1242, for the reasons you've explained on the record, the court does find that would constitute a hardship of service for both the medical issue as well as financial. The court will excuse you from service. Thank you for coming in and completing your questionnaire.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome. Oh, we have a card going up on juror 1204.
I would like to add my number as possible hardship as I did enter information on the questionnaire.
Okay, we'll come back to you then in a moment. Let's talk to juror 1332 next. Yeah, I'm looking at your questionnaire, juror 1332. You filled out a on that part of the questionnaire and did talk about a potential hardship here. Would you like to explain that to the court this time?
Well, my hardship is basically my husband. He's a sole income for our family. We live here together. We don't know anybody, and he works in the middle of nowhere. He's on a specific diet, and I have to prepare and pack all of his food for however long he's going to be gone. And he works on somewhat of a fireman's schedule. When the machine breaks, he has to go. So it gives us not much time, and it's kind of like being always on call.
All right, if you were able to be home each day late in the afternoon, would that give you adequate time to help prepare those meals for your husband?
You know, it's not something I can say definitely, because he could get a call at 9 o'clock at night, he could get a call at 6 o'clock in the morning, he could get a call anytime. He doesn't only work in Idaho. He works in Oregon, Washington, Nevada, and California, and Idaho, and travels through the whole Pacific Northwest. He works on giant inverter machines that transfer power to the utilities, and they're not happy when their machines go down. But other than the two plants he takes care of in Idaho, all the other plants are 6 hours at least one way.
All right. During the course of the trial, do you think there's a way that if you were unavailable to prepare his meals, he might be able to prepare some of those meals on his own?
He would take whatever's in the refrigerator, throw it in his lunch pack, and who knows, you know, because he's in the middle of nowhere where he's working, he can't just hop in the car or it's time to for lunch, you know, go to town and get a sandwich. Like, he's on a special diet and he can't eat out. So he gets really sick when he does. And I work really hard to keep him healthy and keep us going, and, you know, he's older now, and it would be nice if he could really retire when he turns 65, but that's not the case anymore.
All right, any follow-up word are from the state?
I have no follow-up, Your Honor, thank you.
From the defense?
And ma'am, from what I understand, and again, I'm going off memory, but 41 years of marriage.
So coming up on 42, we've been together almost 45.
Please forgive me, we're about disclosing we're about the same age, and this has been a lifelong partner.
Our whole adult life.
And one of the concerns is also in the event that you're sequestered, and you understand what that means, locked up and having to consider something.
Couldn't handle it.
You basically have been inseparable for 41 years.
Absolutely.
And not only would that cause you a distraction and not be able for you to process what needs to be processed in this case.
Absolutely.
Would there be a concern? I don't even have to ask. I guess there would be a great concern about how your husband is doing it.
Absolutely.
And that would be a significant distraction for you.
Absolutely.
Given that, Judge, I'm going to move for cause to have this juror excused. I think this is a significant hardship.
All right. I've considered the hardship expressed with juror 1332. I'll grant the strike from both parties here. So 1332, you're excused. Thank you for filling out your questionnaire and coming in. Bubble 4, I believe you also have something you want to discuss. Is that correct?
I just have a family vacation. June 15th, which I think it's thawed. I know the time frame, depending on when the trial starts.
All right. I'll defer more to counsel. They are the ones that would know best on trial length. It's my understanding we should be done by June 15th, but the state has any follow-up to address any concerns about that time frame on this June 15th vacation, we can follow up with that juror 1204.
Is this trip, if I can ask, is it paid for, pre-planned?
Pre-planned, it's paid for.
And would you be able to get any money back if you weren't able to? Right now, at least, the trial is set to be, I think what was advised is an 8 to 10 week trial. So that shouldn't put you into that time frame. Do you have concerns sitting here today if it is close to that 10-week timeline even?
March about straight up.
Okay. The state has no additional questions at this time.
Any further voir dire from the defense?
I'm not anticipating going to June 15. I guess what I'm concerned about is what if we do? I don't think so. I don't want to speculate to the court. By the same token, Judge, I'm concerned about the distraction, and that would be a distraction if you were still doing this on the 13th or 14th. That'd be fair. And that's what, then you just answered my question, which is if, for instance, we stop and then there's deliberations, we start on the 13th, you're going to be highly motivated to be done by the 15th, aren't you? Judge, and please, sir, don't take this personally. We're just all trying to be fair. So, Judge, I think I'm going to move for cause with this particular panel.
All right. Response from the state?
Judge, the state would just submit on the information provided to the court.
All right. The court is, at this point, going to overrule the challenge for cause on 1204. We have to try to fit in this trial around everyone's schedules, including jurors, and I'm in good faith going to tell you I do believe the trial will be done, not to interfere with that schedule. Can't all predict the future with certainty, so we're trying our best to move things along, and from what I see so far, it does seem to be moving along on schedule. So juror 1204, appreciate your concern. We're going to have you remain in the jury pool for further consideration. We go through another step of peremptory challenges after this, so with that, the court will allow 1204 to return for peremptory challenges. Thank you. All right. The next question we're going to go through would be on knowledge of case. And several of you, I'm sure, in reviewing your questionnaires have indicated you do have some information or knowledge about this case. If you do have any information or knowledge other than what you've learned since you've been summoned as jurors in this case, would you please raise your red card? Okay, none of you have heard anything about the case other than what was told to you in court when you got here last week. Okay, thank you. Let me next discuss the subject matter of the case. This case involves charges the state's filed, including charges of murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud. Is there anything about those charges and the nature of those charges that you think would make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and render a fair and impartial verdict?
Your Honor.
Okay, no one answered affirmatively. I'll next ask some questions that seem like they might be very obvious, but I'm required to ask them pursuant to some Idaho statutes of law. Are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant or know him from any kind of business or social relationship? Okay, no one answered affirmatively. Do any of you have any kind of legal relationship with some of those involved in the court here? So does the relationship of guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, boarder or lodger exist between any of you and any of the attorneys involved here?
No.
Okay, everyone answered no. Are any of you a party in any kind of civil litigation or lawsuit against the defendant, Mr. Daybell?
No.
All answered no. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against the defendant or been accused by any of the prosecutors here of any crime?
No.
All right, everyone answered no. Do any of you have any kind of attorney-client relationship or previous attorney-client relationship with Mr. Pryor or his law firm?
No.
Okay, all answers no. Do any of you have any kind of a relationship by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers, or do you know any of the lawyers from any kind of professional business or social relationship?
No.
All right, everyone answered no. Have any of you ever formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of any of the charges in this case? And if you do answer yes to that, we'll talk to you individually. Have any of you formed an opinion already about this case?
No.
All right, I'll answer no. Do any of you have any bias or prejudice for any reason, either for or against the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, in this case?
No.
Everyone answered no. Are there any of you here that would be unwilling to follow the court's instructions to you as the jury?
No.
Everyone answered no to that. Do you have a religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict in this case?
No.
Okay, everyone answered no there. Would any of you be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the laws instructed by the court?
No.
Okay, everyone answered no there. One final question I call the catch-all question. Do any of you have any other reason you haven't discussed here already why you could not give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? All right, everyone answered no to that. With that, that will conclude the court's voir dire examination. I'll next let the state proceed with their voir dire. After that, the defense may. Bob is going to be conducting voir dire.
I will be, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Blake, you can commence.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being back with us this morning. I know this process has been long. You all had to come in last week and fill out a questionnaire, so we appreciate you sticking with us through this. As you may know, we want to just be thorough as we're selecting a jury. Both the defendant, Chad Daybell, and the state of Idaho have the right to a fair trial. So we're going to ask you some questions today. None of them are meant to offend. I don't really want to put anyone in a hot seat, but I will be asking some of you questions and I will be asking for responses. So I just want you to know why we're doing that. If I were to use the term brutal honesty, I'm going to ask some people what comes to mind. Juror 1392, if you hear the term brutal honesty, what do you think of? So just telling the truth, saying it how it is. Is that fair? Okay. And juror 1379, same question.
I think I would agree, just honesty without fear of consequence, just being honest regardless of what the consequence might be.
And would you all agree that it can also mean not holding back, not trying to spare someone's feelings? Would everyone agree with that? And the reason I bring that up is we're going to ask you to commit to being honest or brutally honest both today as we go through these questions with you. And also at some point, if you're selected as a juror, you're going to go back once you're instructed by the judge and start deliberating with each other. And we want to ensure that anyone serving on the jury can be brutally honest, both here today and further into the process. And we all may know someone that we feel like we can go to get just the honest, how it is answer. So for me, I had my first niece. I found out when she was pretty young, she wouldn't filter her answers. So if I really wanted to know how something looked or how I was looking that day, I could go to her and she did not hold back. And so I don't know if some of you have someone like that in your life, but that's what we're asking for today. Don't hold back. Just tell us how it is. You've also heard from the judge what the charges are in this case. We have multiple counts of conspiracy to commit murder, and we also have multiple counts of first-degree murder. You had a question on your questionnaire regarding seeing graphic images. This case does involve the murder of two children, as well as a mother of five. There will be some images shown, most likely. Does anyone here have concerns if they were to see images that are graphic in nature, maybe unpleasant to look at? That, and you're 1365. Thank you. Have some children, they're older now. Does it cause you any concern, the idea of looking at images of maybe children that are graphic?
No, if it's in a court-related environment and you have to do that, and if it's going to allow more truth to come out and the facts to come out.
Thank you. And juror 1320, I think you also have children. Looks like they're adult children now.
Yes.
Does that cause you any concern, the idea of looking at images of children that may be graphic?
No, as long as it goes towards facts of the case.
And do you feel that you could look at those images and give them the weight you feel they're due in relation to other evidence presented in the case?
Yes.
Thank you. Has everyone here been on a plane before?
Yes.
When you get on the plane, you get the instruction at some point, they say, you know, sit back, lay back, enjoy your flight. We're going to arrive at our destination at such and such time. If instead you got on a plane and the pilot came on and said, hey, I'm going to try to land the plane. I think we'll get there at this time and I'll do my best to land. Would any of you feel comfortable staying on that plane?
No.
I'm seeing that shaking of the heads. And juror 1389, I saw you shake your head no. Would you want to stay on that plane? And why wouldn't you want to stay on that plane?
Experience a pilot has to have in order to fly an airplane. If he can't even make a guess as to when he's going to get in the air, he put the boat wheels down on the ground again. Sorry. What else is he going to make a mistake on?
Thank you for that. And juror 1358, how about you?
Would be my first choice. But you know, as you mentioned, he should have, or she should have some idea of when they will land, how to land. So no, I would not go back.
And the reason I ask that is because, again, when we talk about the trial and the right to a fair trial, we want to make sure that the jurors selected can land the plane. We want to make sure that the jurors can commit to being impartial, to weighing the evidence and rendering a verdict that they believe is the correct verdict. Does everyone here feel like they could commit to that?
Yes.
Thank you. So I have a little boy, and in the mornings when he gets up, if I ask him what he wants for breakfast, 9 times out of 10, it's cheesy eggs. But there is a very specific way he wants me to make his cheesy eggs. There's a recipe I'm supposed to follow. So that recipe includes milk and eggs and cheese and salt and pepper. Sometimes he likes them a little extra cheesy too, so we got to throw that in. But he doesn't want me to vary that recipe. Have any of you had that experience, whether with a kid or someone else, that maybe there's a recipe and they like it done just so? Juror 823, have you ever had that experience?
Yes, somewhat.
Somewhat? Okay. And juror 1204, have you had an experience like that?
Not to that extent, but I can't
call. Do you have kids? Are there any specific ways they like their food made or cut up or that they used to? They're pretty easygoing? Okay. And juror 1251, how about you?
I'm okay with deviating from the recipe.
Okay. If you were given a recipe and told this is how you have to do it, though, so, and what I'm talking about is the judge is going to give you some jury instructions, and those instructions are going to say how you have to handle this case. And he's going to give you an instruction that includes the elements of each offense that the state would have to prove. And there's going to be specific elements or ingredients. So you may look at them and think, well, and kind of like a recipe, you may think, well, if you added this or if you took this away, I think it would be better. But in the courtroom, you wouldn't be able to do that. Could everyone here commit that even if there was something that you wanted to see and you wish was an element or an element that you didn't think should be there, can everyone commit that you would actually follow exactly as that recipe or instructions written out?
Yes.
Does anyone have concerns with that? And with that, one of the things is when we get to the crime of homicide, does anyone have concerns that if it reads an actor did something that caused the death of another person, but the actual cause of death is not an element, meaning if it is the state has to prove that a murder occurred, but one of the elements isn't the cause, does anyone have concerns with that, with following that instruction? Thank you. So today, as you headed to court, if the sky had started to turn gray and then you got into the courthouse and we closed all those windows and we closed the blinds, and when you went outside, it was wet, your car was wet, the grass was wet, the pavement's wet, you start driving home, everything's wet along your drive, are you going to be able to determine what happened?
Yeah.
And juror 823, what would you determine had happened? And juror 142, how about you?
24.
Oh, sorry, 1424. I apologize. Yes.
Yeah, some technical situation.
And you didn't have to see it rain to make that determination, correct? So in this case, you'll hear different types of evidence, and some of the evidence you'll hear referred to as circumstantial. Does anyone have concerns that with the type of evidence presented, you would have concerns weighing that and giving the weight it's due? Do we have any football fans? I see some people nodding their heads. Juror 1358. I think the Kansas City Chiefs won this year. Does that sound right? And even though it may be unfortunate, would you agree that everyone on that team should get a ring? So even though the quarterback may have played a bigger role, would you agree the punter should still get a ring and the coach? So all those involved in that victory should get the ring. So you'll get instructions in this case, and again, kind of talking about that recipe that will say what the elements of each crime are. And it may include elements of aiding and abetting, commanding another, being involved that way. Does anyone have any concerns in following those instructions?
No.
And the judge gave you a bit of an instruction on, and it involved other co-conspirators or other individuals involved. And he's instructed you, you're not to concern yourselves with anything that's happened to them or cases. But in this trial, you may hear evidence or testimony regarding what those co-conspirators did and actions they took. In a conspiracy, if the state is to proves to you that there was an agreement to commit a crime, would any, and then an additional element would be, and then one of the persons involved in that agreement took some action to further that plan to commit the crime. Does anyone have concerns if person B is the one that went out and committed an overt act or some act in furtherance, but the crime itself is the agreement to commit that crime? Does anyone have concerns holding person A still accountable if you're following that recipe and that instruction? Thank you. I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor, Board Dyer for the defense.
Judge, would the court prefer to take a break or would you rather?
Let's go ahead and move forward at this point, given the time.
Ladies and gentlemen, I introduced myself before. I'm John Pryor. I'm the attorney for Mr. Daybell. And we're going to have to ask, some questions. And I don't want any of you, please, to imply that Chad is guilty of anything, because I'm going into areas of concern, and it's just part of the process. What we're really trying to do is to get your feelings and your honest feelings about a variety of subjects. And the reason we do that is because this is an important case. It's a serious charge against Chad. And we need to get as much information about your opinions about bias, about knowledge of different topics, about how you feel. And in order to do that, we are given a short window of time to do that. Ms. Blake asked you to be brutally honest. I'm just going to ask you to just answer the questions as best you can. I'm going to ask you to tell me how you really feel, and remember that there really isn't any wrong answer. All of us think differently. If I were to poll you on an important issue, I would imagine if there were several ways to answer it, we'd get several answers. And not everybody answers things the same way. And what's more important than anything else, each and every one of you have a very important idea and perception of how you feel about different issues. And that's what we're really after. So when I ask you questions, again, I can promise you if you ask me questions, I'd probably have different answers, and all four of us here, the four prosecutors here and myself, would probably have five different answers. So again, there's no wrong answer. I've spoken to some of the other jurors before, and I talked about a story how when I was a young man and I wore smaller clothes, how I was on jury service. And the lawyer at that time asked the jurors, is there anyone who just really doesn't want to be here? Now, I struggle with that because as a citizen and having been raised by an absolutely wonderful mother, an amazing father who taught me the importance of doing your constitutional duty and your civic duty, and that we live in what I think is the greatest country in the world, that you don't shirk that duty. But he also said, and I remember this, and I've continued to do this for the
almost 30 years I've been practicing law. And I ask all the jurors this. I do that because all of us have a lot of things going on in our life. All of us have had issues, and some things are important. Previous juror has a dog, and that's a very big concern. And to some people who are dog lovers, that's a really big concern, and it's very important. Some of you have other concerns. Some of you are in the military service and having to focus on our military and protecting our country. Others have jobs where you're an accountant and you have responsibilities and potential hardships because tax season's coming up. And that's a concern. All of us have concerns. Some of us just don't want to deal with this because they find this very difficult. So I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask you to start off by just please tell me, and please be completely honest with me. This is our opportunity to share information and to kind of get an idea where all of you stand. So is there anybody who just doesn't want to do this? Just feels like, you know what, this is too much for me, or I have so much going on in my personal life that I just can't do this. And I would please ask you to be honest about that. Anybody at all? No? Okay. Now, you've heard the charges against Chad, and you've heard the judge read the charges against Chad, and the prosecutor has talked a little bit about elements, about a recipe, and I'll get to the recipe part of this, but is there anybody, having heard the charges, immediately assumed that Chad was guilty because this judge read charges?
No.
Thank you. Thank you. Does everybody agree with that? No?
Okay.
Yes. All right. Okay. Is there anybody here who believes that Chad should have to testify in order to prove that he's innocent?
No.
Okay. No? Okay. Does everybody understand it? I'm going to ask you to get a little bit of exercise and raise your cards on this one. Does everybody understand that if Chad and I decide to, we don't have to put on a single piece of evidence? Does everybody understand that?
Yes.
And I'll try to limit the raising of the cards. Thank you, folks. And does everybody understand that the prosecuting attorney must prove this case, and that if they don't prove the case, the verdict from you folks has to be not guilty? Do all of you understand that?
Yes.
Yes? Thank you. Thank you. That's okay. Thank you. Okay. I want to go into a couple of... Well, before I start that, I guess I'll go back a little bit. Again, if Chad decides not to testify, is there anybody here who's going to think that he's guilty because he chose not to testify?
No.
All right. Thank you. Nobody? Okay. Now, I want to talk a little bit about bias. Does everybody understand what bias is?
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.